This is 2.1, a Netrunner Reboot Project podcast. Episode 40, Smash On Through. Hey, this is Remy. The title card of this week's episode is Garrot, the much referred to and finally in this pack, killer for criminals. We'll get to that a little bit later. The flavor text for Garrot says, "The first credited icebreaker was nothing more than a unique script to bypass the security calls on a Gibson III data sentry. Garrot has over 20,000 times the data as that first breaker, but the idea remains the same. Cut off the power source from the network, and then smash on through." True Colors is the pack that we'll be examining this time around, particularly the runner side. We'll look at a couple of this and another icebreaker. We'll look at some of the changes that have been made in Reboot. But before we get to that, we're going to continue our top 10 countdown, or top 50 countdown, and a little sneak peek at the future. Precognition, Equity, and Eternity teaser. So in the booster pack, spoilers? What is the name of that channel? Here, I'm going to pull the channel up real quick here on my phone. Just real quick, like. The name of the channel is, in fact, Booster Pack Spoilers and Discussion on the Reboot Discord server. Here, just in the last couple of weeks, has been a lot of discussion about this teaser that the big boy posted. You're going to see a bulleted list of a dozen different teases. Keep using the same word, but it's just teases of upcoming cards in the next booster pack. This is something that Fantasy Flight did, specifically Lucas Litzinger, the original lead designer on Android Netrunner, did in advance of a cycle. Give just these little, these are things you can look forward to. So I'll just read through the announcement and then the teaser list. Equity and Eternity is the fourth Reboot Project booster pack. Its expected release is August of 2024. The emphasis of this pack is Shaper and Wayland, which will each receive 8 cards, including an identity. The Shaper cards will expand on their theme of effects and programs that interact with the heap, or which require recursion to use effectively. The Wayland cards are more diverse, with a generalist but innovative identity, and cards that support many existing Wayland strategies. Some teasers, subject to change as cards are tested. This pack contains a nasty new flatline tool, a Wayland code gate, a card with the number 25 on it, and my guess, my mention was, well, the many factions have 25. He says, no, it's something in the ability of the card. The number 25 is there. The most expensive operation yet. A 3-2 in a faction we said would never get another one. A runner stat line we've never seen before, although some may beg to differ. A Shaper killer with incredible efficiency, but a catch. A console you might finally slot over Astrolabe. Astrolabe is coming. Oof. Is that coming in the fourth cycle? Right? It's Haley's console, right? So, that's then the thing about Shaper. Gets lots of consoles, but they're kind of all not very good. Astrolabe is cheap and gives you easy card draw. Another card that creates cards. Right, so that's going to be like the one in the last pack that generated easy marks into your hand. the completion of a cycle, 2 new flip cards, 2 new collaboration agendas, a new card for each mini-faction, a rebooted upgrade that no one will predict. Well, those are the vague teasers for this pack that's coming in about 4 months. That's the projected release. There has been a lot of discussion about what some of these cards might be. That is a great use of the booster spoilers and discussion channel on the Reboot Project Discord. So I invite you to go take a look at all of the guesses and wrong guesses that have been made there. Anonymous tip. The top 50 countdown. Now, we've skipped it last time. We're going to go back to it. We've gone through numbers 50 down to 31. So now we're going to do another 10 on each side. In each case this time, there are only 3 cards in each of these next 10 that we have not seen already. Again, going to the idea that the core set and the Genesis cycle, and to a lesser extent, the spin cycle, had just a lot of staple, basic, good cards, which is nice. I just always think that's been a nice thing. Anyway, let's start with the corp this time around, number 30. As usual, what I've been doing the last couple of times is including the big boy's comment that he posts along with each card. So number 30, an econ asset so good, it gets played in decks that don't play any other non-operation econ. Adonis Campaign. 29. A reliably solid agenda that has big upside in the right matchups. Project Vitruvius. Number 28. One of the main reasons Wayland is playable now. Posted Bounty. Number 27. The card you want on one credit, or turn one versus Andy. Sweeps Week. This is coming in this pack, actually. We'll be covering it in the next episode, but it's an NBN operation that gives you a credit for each card in the runner's grip. So actually, I guess that's only 2 that we have in this 10 that we haven't seen yet. Number 26, the agenda that made Wayland viable for the first time since Genesis cycle in FFG's game. Oaktown Renovation. This comes in the 4th cycle, the middle of it. It's a 4-2 public agenda, which means it's when you play it, it's turned up face up rather than face down. And when you advance it, you gain 2 credits, or you gain 3 credits if there are 5 or more advancements on it. Number 25. We're nearing the top of the 8s, practically the definition of strong staple. Ash, 2X3ZB9CY. Number 24. The second to last, 8 of 10. Can you believe there are 23 cards better than it? Hedge Fund. Number 23, the final Corp 8. 8 being the rating he's giving on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best. Architect. This comes in the middle of the next cycle. It's an HB Sentry. It is untrashable. The subroutines allow you to install a card from the top 5 cards in R&D and install a card from Archives or HQ. Number 22. This ice has the nastiest hard subroutines in the game and routinely prompts concession when it's rezzed at the right time. Some decks just don't have a fast answer to this, and if they do, they generally cannot get past it more than once. It's not a perfect card, but no ice is, and its best cases are fairly common and so game-ending that it deserves to be our first 9 out of 10. Power card. Archer. Number 21. The winner of the buff bracket. Big Brother. You may remember the buff bracket was something that was done last year, where players voted on which cards were the best reboot changes. And the big brother won that. So there's your 21 to 30 on the corpse side. Let's go take a look at the runner side. Number 30. Well, this is in reference to the Adonis campaign, the econ asset, is what it says. The guy that trashes him. Wizard. Master gamer. Number 29. The backbone of most anarch economies. Liberated account. Number 28. The highest rated buffed runner card. Mr. Lee. Number 27. The breaker that puts Eli in its place. Cerberus Lady H1. This comes in the middle of the next cycle. It's a shaper fractor that breaks subroutines using power counters and is really the first legitimate competition to Corroder's throne position as the best fractor in the game. Lady is very, very good. Number 26. The ID that, along with Eater, revived Siphon Anarch and that won our first world championship. Max, Maximum Punk Rock. This comes in the third deluxe box. It's an Anarch ID. When your turn begins, you trash the top two cards of your stack. Then you draw a card. Number 25, the ultimate face check tool. Fairy. Number 24, which is opposite, posted on the same day that he posted Hedge Fund. I swear I didn't line these two up on purpose. Diesel. Number 23, one of the most respected tricks in the game, so much so that it's less of a trick and more of a constant consideration. Inside Job. Number 22, the card behind the fastest econ engine in the game. Security Testing. This comes in the next deluxe box. It is a criminal resource. Each turn you pick a server, and the first successful run on that server that turn, instead of accessing, you get two credits. Number 21, a powerful but demanding econ engine. Aesop's Pawn Shop. And there is your runner side, 21 to 30. So again, I'll promote the Reboot Project Discord server where you can go and read the discussion. It was had about many of these cards. Some of the back and forth, some have a couple comments, some have a couple dozen. And at this point, Big Boy has actually finished the list. He's gone all the way to number one. We're a little bit behind. That's okay. If you are impatient and don't want to wait to see what comes next, again, head on over to the Top 50 Countdown channel on the Reboot Discord server. Satellite Uplink. True Colors, the runner side. True Colors is the fourth data pack in the spin cycle. It was released January 17th, 2014, a little more than 15 months after the core set. It has 9 runner cards, of which 5 get buffed, and 11 corp cards, of which 6 get buffed. So no nerfs in this pack. We're covering the runner this time around. The runner are distributed this way. There are 3 criminal, 3 shaper, 2 anarch, and 1 neutral card. So let's take a look at the 5 buffs first. For criminal, it's all 3 of their cards get buffs. Lawyer Up, a double event that its cost has been reduced from 2 to 1. It's 1 influence. Lets you remove up to 2 tags and draw 3 cards. Art here from Matt Zeilinger. Leverage, an event that costs 0 now instead of 1. It's 2 influence. You can only play it if you've made a run on HQ, and then you prevent all damage until the beginning of the next turn, unless the corp takes 2 bad publicity. And Garrot, the criminal killer. That's install cost has been reduced from 7 to 6, does have 2 memory units, is 3 influence, and for 1 credit, break a subroutine. Strength is 2 also. For 1 credit, you break a subroutine. For 1 credit, plus 1 strength. One of the Shaper cards is Buffed Capstone, a unique piece of hardware, costs 2 to install, it's 3 influence, gives you this ability. Click. Trash cards from your grip, however many. For each trashed card of which you have a copy installed, draw, used to be 1, now it is 3 cards. And the neutral card also gets buffed. Starlight Crusade Funding, a resource with an install cost now reduced from 1 to 0. When your turn begins, lose click, then ignore any additional costs on each double event you play. That includes, of course, the cost, the extra click cost. The 4 unchanged cards are both Anarch cards. Keyhole, a program with an install cost of 4, 2 memory units, 3 influence, gives you this ability. Click. Run R&D. Rather than accessing, you look at the top 3 cards, trash one of them, and force a shuffle. And Activist Support, a resource with an install cost of 1 and 2 influence. When the corp turn begins, you gain a tag, if you don't have any already. When the runner turn begins, the corp gains a bad publicity, if they don't have any already. And the other 2 Shaper cards are unchanged. LLDS Processor, hardware with an install cost of 1, also just 1 influence. Whenever you install an icebreaker, plus 1 strength until the end of the turn. And Sharpshooter, an icebreaker, not an AI icebreaker, with an install cost of 1, a strength of 3, and a 1 influence cost. You trash it to break any number of subroutines on Destroyer Ice, and for 1 credit, you can give it plus 2 strength. Art here from Ed Matinian. In the at-a-glance Reddit thread, it says, here are good cards. They only identified 2. Good for Anarch is Keyhole. Good for Shaper is Sharpshooter. And sure enough, in the pre-con decks, we see both of those cards. In the Siphon Max deck, which is the only Anarch pre-con that runs account siphon, so the one that's the most similar to the Anatomy of Anarchy deck that we discussed a couple episodes back, there are 2 Keyhole and also an Activist Support. Meanwhile, in the Shaper decks, 3 out of the 4 Shaper pre-constructed decks run 1 Sharpshooter. In FCC Exile, that's Freelance Coding Contract Exile, which we now have almost the entire deck for. We're only missing 2 cards. So 1's in there. In Prepaid Voice Pad Kate, it gets a copy of Sharpshooter. We're still missing 9 of the cards in that deck, although we do have all of the events. And since it's Prepaid Voice Pad, that's kind of the big thing about that deck. And Proco Haley, it's Professional Contacts Haley. We're just only missing 8 cards out of that deck, although, crucially, it's missing the ID and a card that doesn't come until near the end of the pool, but is a very important card. So you're not going to be able to play Proco Haley in the 2.1 group for some time to come. Data Sucker. Let's take a look at the runner buffs in True Colors. One of the comments from the Project Description tab of the Master Reboot Project spreadsheet, where you can see all the changes, says this. In the event that a card is so weak that a simple change will not make it playable in any competitive deck, the goal is to make it so casual players who choose to play with the card are not needlessly punished. Right? So the whole point of the Reboot Project is to balance everything, but also to do it simply. Change 1 number. And that's the simple change that it's talking about there. But sometimes changing 1 number isn't enough. And so be it. Still, only 1 number is changed. So leverage seems to be one of those, where it's been dropped to 0 cost, because why not? It isn't good. Leverage, to remind you, is the one that, after you've made a run on HQ, you can play it, then that's for your second click. And then until the beginning of your next turn, you can't take it. You don't take any damage. So that leaves you two clicks in the remainder of your turn, and also the entire corp turn, where you can't take damage, which seems great. But it's only if the corp takes two bad publicity. So if the corp wants to kill you on the next turn, all they have to do is take the two bad publicity, right? So it basically reads like, keep yourself from being scorched. But what you should probably read it like is, run through scary ice this turn. Or, at the very least, if the corp doesn't want you to run through scary ice, you land two bad publicity on them. Fluffy One has been posting his reviews of cards that have been changed. This is one of those. He says this: Leverage, at best, is decent Jinteki PE tech. Right, that's the one where you're taking a net damage every turn, every time I think something is scored. And at worst, useless. Changes. Play cost from 1 to 0. Now you only waste a click. Saying that even at a cost of 0. Wonder. What if the cost of something was like -1? Like if you play this, I guess that would just be gain 1 credit as part of the ability. But it would be a change of just 1 number. If you change the play cost to -1, where if you play this card, you get a credit and get this ability. Does that become crazy? Yeah, probably. The pros, Fluffy One says, are either get 2 bad publicity or immunity to damage until your next turn begins. Block the self-damage from Net Ready Eyes, which we don't have yet, Stim Graft, which is in a booster pack, or Fetal AI or Snare. You can run Archives without getting Shock. So those are all good things. But you're taking 2 clicks, right? The run on HQ, which maybe you want to do anyway, and the play of this card to be able to enable this. When couldn't you just draw a card and put up against the net damage, resist the net damage that way? I don't know. So again, it's not a very good card, but it is a little less bad. Capstone, which gives you, lets you draw a card when you trash cards from your grip that you already have played. Basically, those are dead draws. So imagine a game where you have played Magnum Opus, and then you draw your second Magnum Opus. Well, now that's wasted. And so you can, using Capstone, you can pitch that card and get something new. Well, that costs a click to pitch the card, a click to get something new. So you wouldn't do that for one card, but maybe you could do it for 2 or 3. And that's fine. So that was the point. In its original incarnation, it would just replace all those extra copies of cards, which is okay. And now, again, as Fluffy One points out, it turns all those dead draws, rather than to just replacing themselves, now they're all diesels. That's pretty good, right? So now you draw, have that extra Magnum Opus, you click, and you basically get a diesel because you pitch the Magnum Opus and you draw 3 cards. I mean, that sounds really good. On the other hand, see, I feel like Shaper is the faction that's least likely to be running multiples of things, because they have so much ability to search the deck, so much ability to recur things from the trash. But still, if this is a situation where, you know, you have a simple deck, lots of multiple copies, I mean, it's not terrible. And being able to draw through your deck faster can be very useful. 2 cards in this deck are specifically designed to interact with doubles. One of them is a double, and we have Lawyer Up. So look, just as a brief reminder, just about, so far, every card but one that we've seen, every double but one, has been reduced to 0 or it already cost 0. Celebrity Gift is the only one that was not reduced. It's cost 3, still cost 3. Every other one has gone down. Frame Job from cost 1 to 0, Hostage from 1 to 0, Eureka from 3 to 0, Running Interference from 4 to 2, Lawyer Up only goes from 2 to 1. So I guess that makes it, and the fact that there's any cost left suggests that it is okay, right? Because otherwise you'd drop it to 0 and say, at least it's only 0. What does it do? Well, for a credit and 2 clicks, you can remove 2 tags. something that would normally cost you 4 credits and 2 clicks. So there you're saving 3 credits. Although, of course, you're spending an extra click. As an added bonus, you also draw 3 cards. So it works nicely with Account Siphon if you're not wanting to go tag me. So you keep more of your hard earned credits, and Criminal is not super great at draw. It's interesting, though, again, that a cost of 0 was apparently deemed too much for a card that to me seems sort of situational, although it is also kind of powerful. So, anyway, I guess maybe the thing is because Account Siphon costs 2 credits now. Account Siphon used to be 0. So Account Siphon now costs 2. You're already losing 2 of the credits. So to drop this to 0 would just make it a little bit too strong. That's my guess. Let's say that's what it is. And then what about Starlight Crusade funding? Well, we don't have all the pieces we need yet to run a heavy doubles deck. There are some the last pack in the cycle is called Doubled Time. So it's all about doubles. Some crucial components in there. And even then, though, even when we get all those pieces, you're probably just looking at one power turn where you're playing multiple doubles. And then you probably want to shut this thing off because you're losing a click every turn. And then you need Aesop. Or a card that's coming way down the line in the fourth cycle that gives you the click back. But still, it's just not very good. And so it's been reduced to 0. Sharpshooter. New icebreaker options in True Colors. So this used to be called Data Sucker. I'm calling the other section Data Sucker, the one I just did. And Sharpshooter is going to be my section about breakers. And of course, it's named after Sharpshooter, which is the second typeless icebreaker in the game after Deus Ex, right? So it's not a fractor, decoder, or killer. And it's not AI. It just is icebreaker. So both of them are similar in that they target a specific type of secondary ice subroutine, rather than the usual barrier code gate or sentry. So in the case of Deus Ex, that secondary type is AP. Here with Sharpshooter, it's Destroyer. And then there's one more card in this particular set coming in the next deluxe box that targets Tracers. Now the full reboot card pool contains 2 additional typeless icebreakers, but they're not like this. Now these secondary subroutines have been present since the core set. Right there on the individual piece of ice, you're like, what are these words? What are they? They're very descriptive. A glance tells you what does this card do. For example, Tracer, pretty obvious, it traces. AP causes damage. So maybe it stands for anti-personnel. And Destroyers, well, they destroy, specifically programs. So when we're considering the utility of Sharpshooter, the question we have to answer naturally is, how many and what sort of destroyers are out there? At this point in the card pool, by the way, there's 16 total in the reboot card pool. We've seen half of them. The 8 that we've seen so far that are destroyers are Ichi 1.0, Rototurret, Archer, Burk Bugs, Ichi 2.0, Swarm, Grim, and Swordsman. Well, there's some heavy hitters in there, right? So that sort of argues for Sharpshooter being a useful thing. And again, there's a copy included in each of the Shaper pre-constructed decks. Well, 3 of the 4. Early on, when learning the game, I think it's common to feel like, I need to install all my icebreakers before I can run. But in general, that's not true, because most ice, especially in the early game, can't really hurt you. It can cost you money, or it can waste your clicks, but it doesn't really do damage. Barriers generally just end the run. Code gates generally just inconvenience. There are exceptions, of course. Heimdall 1, Heimdall 2, and Wall of Thorns are all barriers that can do damage, but they're all expensive. And even the Bioroids can still be clicked through. And then on the code gate side, you've only got Victor 1 and Victor 2 that do any kind of damage. And again, they're Bioroids. You can click through them. So you see, they're, except for Wall of Thorns, the only barrier or code gate that could hurt you, you can click through. The rest of them don't. That's all by design, of course, that these things can't hurt you so much in the early game, or they can be dealt with very easily, or if they can't, they're more expensive. And you may remember a segment from episode 33 called Aggressive Running, What's to Fear, wherein we established the answer is not much, except for sentries. Because, of course, sentries can hurt you. As that article established, Neural Katana's 3 net damage can be a significant hindrance in the early game. And there are lots of tracers in the sentry pool. Again, that's something we'll come back to when we get to that tracer card in the second deluxe box. And as we learn early on when playing, having out, for example, just a fractor to break the end the run that's been rezzed means you're now in danger of hitting things like roto turrets, since they can set you back by wiping out your program. And so the logic that an intermediate player arrives at is get a killer out. But if you're trying to go fast, and all you're really worried about is losing other programs to an unexpected destroyer sentry, well, here's another tool that can help you to run more safely. Other programs, of course, maybe they're not icebreakers, right? So it's like Data Sucker, or Parasite, or Magnum Opus, right? Once again, I mentioned 3 of the Shaper precons use 1 copy, which makes sense in Shaper because they have the ability to get it out with something like self-modifying code or pull it back with clone chip. But the 1 influence cost means it's easily imported into other factions if you like. Although maybe you don't. Anyway, that's what Sharpshooter is for, beating destroyers. But how good is it at doing that? It's very good. It costs only 1 to install, which makes it among the cheapest breakers, not quite as good or broadly applicable as Fairy's 0, but it's the same as the not good Creeper. It breaks any number of subroutines when trashed, so just like Fairy or Deus Ex, and it has an amazing boost rate of 2 strength per credit, and its base strength is 3. So those are all great. Let's look at some numbers. See if I can present this chart in audio form. We're going to compare a handful of these destroyers to our standard bearer, Garrot, which we have finally gotten to, which I'll talk about in a minute, the amazing Fairy, or this new Sharpshooter, or even Mimic if they're cheap enough. So Ichi 1.0 costs Garrot 5, Fairy 2, Sharpshooter only 1. Now, let's take note that it also Sharpshooter has an install cost of 1, whereas Fairy's is 0. So effectively, that makes Sharpshooter's cost 2. And so that's what also. So it's the same cost as Fairy to break Ichi. Roto turret. To break it completely for Garrot costs 2. Same for Mimic. Or just to break the trash program, end the run is only going to be 1 for either. Fairy breaks it for 0. Sharpshooter is 1 because of the install cost. Archer costs 8 to fully break for Garrot, 4 for Fairy, but only 2 for Sharpshooter. Although, again, it's 3 if you include the install. Similarly with Ichi 2.0, 7 for Garrot, 4 for Fairy, 2, actually 3, for Sharpshooter. A Grim is 4 for Garrot, 3 for Fairy, again, technically 2 for Sharpshooter, and then Swordsman, which is 2 for Garrot or Mimic, is 0 for Fairy and is, technically, with the install cost, 1 for Sharpshooter. So, it looks really impressive. If without that 1 install cost, it would be so much better than Fairy in these situations. But as it is as good as, or 1 better than Fairy on expensive sentries, but not quite as good as, though still better than Fairy. It's quite as good as Fairy, though still better than Garrot or Mimic on low-strength sentries. A key difference, though, is that Fairy costs 3 influence, Sharpshooter costs only 1. So if you're importing, if you're Anarch, maybe you want Sharpshooter. If you're Shaper, you probably want Sharpshooter, because that's the thing, is you don't have to import the very expensive Fairy. So does that mean that Ferry at this point is primarily only seen in criminals? Or is that cost, that difference of one for something like Roto-Turret, worth importing the three influence cost? I guess I should have looked at the pre-con decks before I asked that question, but I didn't. So I don't have an answer to that question. Potentially, we'll say potentially. Garrote is the other icebreaker we get this time around. Now, I've discussed Garrote already with every sentry that's come along so far, because it is part of the same set as Corroder and Gordian Blade. They all have two strength. They all take one to boost strength and one to break a subroutine. They differ only in installation cost, where Corroder is two, Gordian Blade is four, Garrote is now six. Gordian Blade will retain its strength when boosted, and Garrote takes up two memory units. Here's an observation I made back in episode 16 when talking about sorting ice that I think is framed well enough that I'm going to reuse it here. Interestingly, the difference between Garrote and Mimic on the low strength is negligible, just one credit on the three strength ice. And the difference between Garrote and Ninja is negligible on the high strength, with Ninja just a touch better on a couple. Mimic costs three, Ninja costs four, Garrote costs six and two memory units. I mean, what I'm trying to say is that Garrote is basically Mimic plus Ninja in one card, and a credit cheaper. And of course, in the original version of the game, they're actually the same cost. So Garrote seems good. Yes, you have to deal with the extra MU, but often you're using more than one killer anyway, so this is everything in one package. True, but the extra MU can be a problem, especially for criminals in a world where Desperado does not give you an extra MU. Do you always have more than one killer running at the same time? And six is a hefty cost for something that you probably want up and running as early as possible. Maybe Shapers, who want the ultra-efficient rig, could go for this with their Corroder and Gordian Blade, although the three influence is a pretty steep price. But at the end of the day, does anybody want it? Fluffy One rated the card a 5, saying, I would not run this. And in the Big Boys Top 50 countdown, we haven't reached Corroder yet. It's in the top 20. Gordian Blade came in at position 44. And when I answered, where would Garrote be? Big Boy said, around 200. Now, the runner pool is about 400 cards, so right in the middle, pretty much right where Fluffy One put it. So all of those drawbacks to Garrote that I just mentioned, the 2MU that you have to have, the upfront cost, and the influence cost, really, really hinder Garrote. Now, that said, I'm still going to keep using it as a point of reference because I think it's just a useful one-to-one point of reference to break. But am I going to actually put it into a deck? Yeah, probably am. Enigma. We're taking a look at some of the flavor in this particular pack. We have more and more identities coming along as the card pool develops, and so we're seeing the various characters pop up on different cards. So just in this pack, you've got activist support, where we see Reina Roja being arrested. Remember, the ability there is you're giving the court bad publicity and you're taking a tag. That kind of, you know, there's like some protesters in the background, so that kind of all fits together. You have leverage, where we see Andromeda apparently physically infiltrating a corporation. There's security all around her that have weapons, but she doesn't seem very concerned. She's wearing her fancy red dress. So, in this card, you've made a run on HQ, literally, apparently, and now threatening bad publicity to avoid getting shot. So I think that's a nice little flavor win. Meanwhile, Capstone, we have a not great piece of artwork showing the professor in some kind of room putting the final piece of a puzzle together, or the capstone on like a pyramid or something. It's actually kind of a flavor fail, though, because what Capstone rewards you for is running multiples of things. And the professor does not really run multiples of things, right? He runs singleton copies of most things. It's also worth pointing out that Sharpshooter has flavor text from the professor where he talks about my students like using these one-off things. But again, isn't that what the professor does? Use one-off things? And then a fourth card does not have an ID on it. Lawyer Up, where we see a criminal getting released from jail. Why isn't it Gabe? That seems like a missed opportunity. Red Herrings, Breaker Bay Grid. So a couple episodes back, when covering the top 50 countdown, I mentioned that Breaker Bay Grid, which reduces the cost of other things you install in that server by, what was it, 5? I mentioned some of the cards that would be good for, and one of the things I mentioned was San City Grid. Well, Gaminet pointed out, no, you can't do that. You can't have 2 region upgrades in the same server, rezzed at the same time. So they don't actually play well together, but still, Breaker Bay Grid, real good. Many of the cards discussed in this week's episode are linked in the show notes. Music is from Alexi Action. The website is netrunner2.1.com. Of course, go hang out at the Reboot Discord server, ask your questions, find some games, play those games online at retechie.fun. Feel free to contact me there on Discord or on BoardGameGeek or on Reddit, or email me if you want. The AstroScript pilot program this time around is the final part of our 8-part discussion from the worlds of Android about clones. And in this case, it is just a story, a little short story, about Caprice Nise. As much as I would have loved to hold on to this until we get to the 6th pack, it just made more sense to go ahead and keep it in line. So we'll have that Caprice Nise story coming up, if you want. Otherwise, thanks for listening. See you next week. I require extraction. The idea you supplied was accepted without raising eyebrows. I have continued to take the pills you provided, so I passed the genetic screening. And I am confident that I have not spoken out of character or otherwise acted in a suspicious manner. Yet they must suspect, because my access has been suddenly limited. I have a theory as to why, which I will explain. First, let me demonstrate that I have acquired enough information in my short time here to call the mission a success. Then you will be quick to retrieve me and, I trust, supply the promised reward. The Nisei line is the first of a new generation of clones, superior to Jinteki's previous offerings. They have one trialing at the NAPD as a police detective to compete with HB's high-end Bioroid models. There is a lot of pressure on Caprice Nise, the clone detective, but Chairman Hiro keeps her motivated. She knows that the fate of the rest of her genome depends on her performance. The other Nise clones are still in vats, ready and waiting, their fate undecided. She visits them sometimes. Caprice has to visit Jinteki for review every few weeks, and she usually makes a point of visiting her sleeping sisters. She passes slowly from one to the next, peering at the faces, communing with them. There are rumors she can communicate with them, but then there are many rumors about her. She is as mysterious as she is beautiful. It is quite different when Chairman Hiro visits. He strides up and down the vats like a general surveying his troops. Sometimes he has Senior Director Toshiyuki Sakai with him, and they talk about their plans. The Nisei clones are a personal project for Hiro. I've heard it said among the human staff that he isolated the genes responsible for psychic powers and manipulated these within the clones to give them psi abilities. I've found nothing official on this score, but I suspect that there is some truth to these rumors. If Caprice was psychic and sensed or felt my intentions, it would explain my current predicament. The Nisei are the first of the newest clone generation, so they are paving the way for other lines. These are still at the experimental stage, though, and information on them is extremely hard to come by. I know the Musashi clones by name only. What their abilities may be, I have not determined. I hear their name whispered infrequently. But whether the speakers fear the wrath of Jinteki or are afraid of the new clones, I do not know. Perhaps they are psychic too, for what could be more frightening than a clone that can read your thoughts? Dr. Hitomi Knox is Caprice's psychologist. As part of her review, she assesses her mental stability. Perhaps she tests her for psi too, but I have not been able to confirm this. Theirs are private interviews, which she seems to look forward to with enthusiasm. Caprice must be a unique pupil. She's the only Nisei currently in action. She moves with great grace, too. I would not be surprised to find she has combat skills, but I have not seen her training at Jinteki. I suspect such skills would be a benefit to a police detective, but it is only supposition on my part. There were two Nisei clones before her, and what became of them is uncertain. As you might already know, Nisei often names its prototype clones alphabetically, so Caprice must be the third of her line. Her predecessors, if they ever successfully breathed outside of their vats, must have failed in some way. The cloning process is a modern marvel, but it is not entirely without flaws. It is feasible that those first two Nisei clones were simply not viable. Misato Inada looks after the more practical side of Caprice's existence. She liaises with the NAPD and makes sure Caprice receives a fair chance to perform and demonstrate Jinteki's brilliance. She is a very intelligent woman, but she is not as security conscious as some of her colleagues. I was able to gain access to her office for a time and have made copies of some documents you will be glad to receive. I will retain these documents until I am satisfied that you have made adequate provision for my future. You were extremely thorough in smoothing my path to employment within Jinteki, and I expect you to take the same care with the arrangements made for my future life. I should have liked to keep the face after all, since it feels so familiar even after this short time. I think it is better than the one I had before. The new Angelus air is not kind to natural skin. However, I feel a new identity will be necessary. Relocating to Mars will not be enough if Jinteki is aware of my betrayal. With your vast resources, you must make it impossible for them to find me, and I'm ready for a new life. Do not be tempted to abandon me at this stage. I am not above taking my knowledge of your own underhanded dealings to the press. Alternatively, I could return to my new employers and provide them with information instead. I spent considerable time within your own offices while you prepared me for this mission, and I made good use of that time. All I am asking is for you to provide what you promised me a little earlier than planned. I assure you, the documents alone make it worth your while.